Morning. Today's daf in Nida is Yud Dalet. We are on the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis right after having completed the Mishnah. Yesterday we started the second parak of the Masechta, and the parak is dedicated to the Bedikas. First parak also was dedicated to the topic of Bedikas. First parak dealt with the issue from a more from a more structured standpoint of why Bedikas are done and Tumah Meisleis. The retroactive term that goes back 24 hours. Our perek deals a little more with the practicalities of when to do bedikas, how to do bedikas. And so the first mission, the opening mission, which we did yesterday, is called Hayad Hamar Belivdok Benashim Meshubacha. So women should be doing bedikas frequently. As we learned already in the first perek, this is in reference to a woman who is in Osek Betaharos. She's dealing with Truma and Kachim, and she wants to remain. She wants them to remain tahor, so therefore she needs to do constant bedikas to make sure that she's tahora, so that the taharos are in a state of tahara. But if it's just labala, so then bedikas are not recommended, and meaning on a constant, on a frequent basis. Obviously, bedikas are necessary in order to move from a cheskas tmeya to a cheskas tahora, but that's something we're going to be discussing later in the Masechta. In the meantime, that's what we learned in the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah also mentioned yesterday, Uva Anashim Tikatzitz. However, a man should be doing Bedika never. Mishnah speaks actually stronger language than that. Mishnah says the hand should be cut off. So we went through yesterday the lengthy discussion of the Gemara regarding a man in the Isra of Shechvazer Levatala. And any kind of stimulation that a man does to himself that would result in Shechvazer Levatala. And wasting a seed would be violations of the Torah. Exactly what is analogous to? So the Gemara yesterday didn't hold back at all. The Gemara yesterday said it's analogous to Avodah Zarah, to Shvichas Damim, to Gilui Arayos, to Niyuf. Okay, it's a Dor HaMabul. Heavy list of comparisons the Gemara makes to the person who is mostly Zera Levatala. The Mishnah yesterday, as we turn to Yud Gimel Amud Beis, talks about how to do bedikas for women who are mentally incompetent. Women who are mentally incompetent, on one hand, do not have the mental faculty to do a bedikah on themselves. On the other hand, would like to eat truma, and other family members would like them to eat truma. Obviously, we're talking about Nashis Kohen, Bas Kohen. So what do they do in terms of bedikas? So others will do bedikas for them. And that's what we discussed yesterday in the Mishnah, the Chereshes, the Shota. Suma we took out of the Mishnah. Nitrifa Daita. So as long as they have relatives who are Pikachos, who have the mental faculty, so they can be Misakin. They can rectify and help them. Help them with the Bedika, if necessary, told them the Mikvah, etc., etc. And then they can eat Truma. We are going to go back. I'm going to start this morning from Tana Rabbanan. I know I read this yesterday. But let's go back to Gimel Amud Beis at the right after the dots, about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. The last few words in the line. Tana Rabban, the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Kohen Shota Matbilen Oso Umachilen Oso Truma La Erev. So if I have a Kohen Shota, so again, same story. He's a deranged Kohen. So he doesn't have his mental faculties about him. So what we could do is we can tovah him in the mikvah so that he'd be able to eat truma. Truma, of course, that evening. Meaning, remember, for tahara, you need two things. You need harav shemesh. Sorry. You need tvila and you need harav shemesh. So that evening, he'll be able to eat truma. Now, here's the problem. The problem is that he goes to bed, and from that point going forward, we don't know. We don't know if he's going to remain in a state of tahara. He doesn't have his mental faculties about him, so we just simply don't know if he can remain in that state of tahara. So, Misharmim Oso Shalo Yishan. So basically what you're going to do is you're going to make sure he doesn't fall asleep. Because Yishan, once he falls asleep, Tamei. Lo Yishan Tahor. So once he falls asleep, he's Tamei, and as long as he hasn't fallen asleep yet, he's Tahor. Now, obviously, a person can only stay awake so long. So this obviously is a limited scenario. The point of the Brice is very simple. That after he goes to sleep, we simply do not know whether he is tamir or not. In other words, he could have been in Balkari while he falls asleep. He does not have the mental faculties to have a proper shmir over himself. And so therefore, this tefillah and his ability to eat truma is limited to only until he falls asleep. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, Omer, Osna, Lokisha, or Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok says, well, why don't we do the following? Why don't we construct a pouch for him? Almost like a jockstrap. And he'll wear it. And that way he'll know whether or not he becomes a Balkari or does not become a Balkari. So they say to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, that's an awful idea. because not only is that, it's going to do the exact opposite of what you wanted it to do. Because what it's going to do is it's going to warm up the area, it's going to create stimulation, it's going to create shechrot zera. So he says back to them, well, what are you suggesting? Meaning, I'm presenting solutions. And what exactly are you presenting? So they said, look, we're about solutions also. He'll tovel in the mikvah, he'll experience Erev Shemesh until he goes to bed. He's good. He can eat truma until the night. Meaning, we're not saying no, we're just simply saying that it's limited in terms of what he can do and when he can eat truma. According to you, however, you're suggesting that he wears some sort of pouch. Yeah, I'll tell you what. He'll wear the pouch. I'll have some zera coming out of him, and it'll be absorbed into this pocket. And you don't know, and we don't know. And so, therefore, your solution is not a solution. It just creates more problems. Tana Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. I'm sorry, Tana. The Gemara quotes the following Bryce. Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Amr. They said, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, so you make for him a pocket. So again, the construction of what we described moments earlier. But instead of using a kis shel or, something made out of leather, so make it out of metal. So I'm Rabbi Vishal Nechoshes. So Rabbi says you can make it out of copper. Kedetanya will enter the Bryce. Rabbi Yehuda Amirono, so give on shel ezov ki'ilu hein shel Nechoshes. Now the Gemara over here is quoting a Mishnah and Para, and without going through all the details, and please see Rashi over here. Rashi does go through some of the details. But for us right now, let's just, I'll give a very short explanation. We're talking about how much water needs to be carried in order for the person to be tameh. We learned just a couple days ago in the daf that for the person who sprinkles and the person's being sprinkled upon, they're both tahor. Who's tameh? The person who carries the mei nida, the solution of the para aduma. And for that person who carries it, he has to carry a certain amount. How much does he have to carry? So the Gemara over here is quoting the Shita of Rav Yehuda, which is, not the amount that's absorbed into the azov. The hyssop is a, it's a reed. Not the amount absorbed in, just the amount that is on the exterior of the azov. And basically, here's how you look at the azov. Look at the azov as if it's made out of copper, i.e. it's non-absorbent. And the whole point that we're just trying to get from here is that the copper is a non-absorbent substance, and that's all we're saying from here. So anyway, so we'll create for this Kohen Shota a kiss, some sort of pocket that's going to be made out of copper. It's not going to be absorbent. And that way we'll know if, in fact, there's zera or there's no zera. And it's not going to get absorbed into the pocket. Amra papash mamina mechlesayim asurim. The Gemara is going to make a statement. The Gemara makes a statement which to us sounds strange, to say the least. And Rav Papa says, do you know that the pants are prohibited? Pants are prohibited. And again, in the context of the Gemara, we totally understand. In the context of the Gemara is telling us that anything that warms up the area and can create stimulation and can create shechot zera levatala, that's no good. So the Gemara says, well, pants are going to create that, and therefore it's no good. Now, I bet you that most men that you know wear pants. So when the Gemara makes a statement like this, that michnasayim are asurim, so it's a curiosity that the Gemara says the pants are prohibited. And meanwhile, I'd say that most people wear pants. And not only that, okay, good, not only that, vaksiv. And the Gemara says, and on top of that, the Kohanim instructed to wear pants. How could you possibly tell me that pants are also when meanwhile, we'll go with the primary question, which is a question presented by the Pesukim in the Torah. Kohanim are instructed to wear pants as part of the big day kahuna. So the Gemara says, how could the Tanya, michnasei Kohanim lamahin domim? So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know, when we say pants, there's pants and of course there's pants. And the pants that are worn by the Kohanim, those aren't exactly what we would call pants. You know what they're like? So the Gemara is going to give us a description. And here, a picture would be worth more than 1,000 words. But we don't have pictures. We have a description. So go through the description of the Gemara. Kimin pamanya shaparashim lamala ad masayim lamata ad yirechayim. Okay, good. That's the description of the Gemara. Okay, and I know it's my responsibility to try to give some shot and some explanation of what this means. Rashi, on the bottom of the Amud. Also, I'm sorry, let me just read on a little bit more of the Gemara. The Gemara gives a little more description. Okay, good. So that's the description of the Gemara of the pants that are worn by the Kohanim. And take a look at Rashi over here. I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now, but take a look at Rashi, where Rashi also tries to give a description of what these pants look like. Basically, without going into too much detail, basically, these pants are basically some sort of wraparound. The wraps around the area. There's no pockets. There's no area where it warms up the the region, and it doesn't create any kind of stimulation. And so there's pants, and then there's pants. In other words, so the pants that have and that go into the area and warm up the area, that's no good. The pants that just kind of loosely wrap around, that would be fine. Okay. Of course, it begs the question: Hey, we wear pants, so how do we engage in such behavior? So this is not a new question that I'm asking based on the Gemara. The Rishonim are already bothered by this question, and the Rishonim give suggestions and answers in terms of how to synchronize our Gemara that we just learned and the modern practice. I say modern, I mean at least the last 1,000 years, the modern practice of wearing pants. Amar Abayis, we turn now to the top of Yudala Madalaf. Ruchli Gamala Masurim Lechol B'Truma. If you're a camel rider, you can't eat truma. Now, you have to be a camel rider, and of course you have to be a Kohen. But still, the point is that if you're a camel rider, so you can't eat truma, because again, the camel riders are going to be sitting on the animal in a way it stimulates them, in a way that they're going to be Motzi Zera. I was going to say Motzi Zera Levatala. Doesn't matter. They're Motzi Zera. And as a result of that, they're going to be Tamei, and they can't eat truma. Tainamihach, the Gemara quotes a Bryce as well. Ruchli Gamalam Kulam Rishayim. So as far as the Ruch Ve'Gamalim are concerned, they're Rishayim. Now, those are strong words, but, yes, those are strong words, but in the context of what we're describing, yeah. In other words, they're being Motzi Zera Levatala. Now I can add the word Levatala, because in this context, that's what the Braisa means. They're being Motzi Zera Levatala, and as a result of that, go back to yesterday's daf, and the litany of descriptions and adjectives that are given to the person who's Motzi Zera Levatala. Now, in a chinami, meaning that these people are not actively trying to be Motzi Zera Levatala, but just simply by their occupation and what they chose to do, and because they're sitting on a camel, so as a result of that, they're Motzi Zera Levatala, the Braisa doesn't hold back, Rishayim. Sapanim Kolam Sadikim. Now, as far as sailors are concerned, sailors are the best. They're Sadikim. Beautiful Rashi over here, Rashi, second line down, Kolam Sadikim, Shedarim B'Sakana V'Libam La'avim Shebashamayim. So it's not an easy life to be a sailor. You're in constant danger. And so therefore, if you're in constant danger, what do? You constantly daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it sounds funny, but that's exactly the point. Meaning they're in constant need of divine assistance, and they constantly ask for divine assistance. Now, Chamar, now as far as donkey drivers are concerned, Mehem Rishayim and Mehem Tzadikim. Yesh v'yesh. You know, some donkey drivers are not good, some donkey drivers are good. And by the way, there's no middle, meaning Rishayim and Tzadikim. So the question, of course, is why? So Ikedamri Hadamachav Hadalamachav. So the Gemara gives one of two ways to understand our donkey drivers. One is whether they put a saddle or they didn't put a saddle. So if they put a saddle on, so that saddle is understood to be a hard saddle, and it's not going to stimulate the area. If, however, they don't put a saddle on, and they just put a towel on over the donkey, and they ride on top of the towel, that's going to stimulate the area. And that makes a difference between being a rusher versus being a tzaddik. Oh, that's the second possibility of the Gemara. Igad Amri had the matartain, had the matartain. Gemara gives another possibility in terms of how they ride the donkey. Mm-hmm. So if they're riding the donkey where they're straddling the donkey, that's Rishayim. If they're sitting side saddle, that's Tzadikim. Mm-hmm. Okay. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi light amanda digani aparkid. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would curse somebody who, when lying down and sleeping, so he would sleep on his back. And as a result of that, it would lead to stimulation, and so he would and he would curse the person who engaged in that behavior. If you take a look at Rashi over here, Aparkid, Panav Lamala V'Gnusu. So Rashi describes how that this is a embarrassing situation. Shapamim Shid Kasheiver Toch Shen Asoviet Gala. So first Rashi points out that he could end up in a very immodest situation. V'Oshi Adam Munachos Al Evrav Umischamim. And it could also lead to Shechvat Zer Levatala. So as a result of that, Rabbi Shimon ben Levi says that one should not engage in this behavior and a curse for somebody who does. Now the Gemara says, now what about a halacha that we learned back in Brachos, and not so long from now, we're going to be learning in Brachos again, which is Prakdan. So a person who is in this position should not be saying Kriya Shema. Meaning it's not a modest position to say Kriya Shema. Now, if you're learning the statement of Rav Yosef, so here's what you're walking away with. Meaning it's not the worst, it's just right now you're not in the best position to say Shema. So, Kriya Shema hu delo yikra ha-migna shapir dami. Sounds like the only thing that you're inhibited from doing is saying Kriya Shema. But in terms of sleeping, you can sleep in that position. So the Gemara says, linyan migna be-matzli shapir dami. So the Gemara says, look, not exactly. if you're going to go to sleep, so as long as you're not flat on your back, you're flat on your back, and as long as you're tilted a little bit to the side, shabidami, that would be okay. But li'in kriyashma, kimatzli aser. However, for kriyashma, tilting a little bit, that's unacceptable. Meaning for kriyashma, you have to be totally on your side. Rav Yochanan matzli v'kari kriyashma. The Gemara says, what about Rav Yochanan? Rav Yochanan would tilt a little bit to say kriyashma, and we just said that that's not enough, that's insufficient. So shani Rav Yochanan v'bal basar hava. So what the Gemara tells us, and the Gemara tells us this a couple of times throughout Shas, is that Rav Yochanan, yeah, so he was healthy, but healthy meaning not the word healthy as we understand it nowadays. Healthy means he was a ballbuster. He had a lot of flesh on him. He was a heavy man, and so for him to lean all the way on his side, that was just a difficult position to for him to get into. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Mishnah and the sugya of the Gemara regarding the ways that people could be misakin themselves, tovel in the mikvah, people who don't have their mental faculty. And in addition to that, we learned about various occupations that are good or bad vis-a-vis their stimulation of their body, which brings us back to yesterday's daf, and the prohibition of pants. That's a funny sentence. The prohibition of pants. Okay, we are to the Mishnah on Yudal Amud Aleph, and our Mishnah is now going to continue with the discussion of bedikas. And now the Mishnah is going to talk about frequency. How often should a bedika be done? Derech Benos Yisrael Mishamshos B'Shnei Edim. So, Benos Yisrael, the manner in which they should be doing examinations for themselves is using two cloths. Edim over here, right, probably that's a better pronunciation. I agree. So so we're talking about cloths over here that's used for examinations, and they will be the determinant in terms of whether they're Tameya or Tahora. Echalov Echalam. So in terms of the two cloths, one's going to be used by her and one's going to be used by him, meaning after they have relations with one another, so she will use the cloth to examine herself, and he will use the cloth also to wipe himself. Now, as far as the snus are concerned, women who are modest, so they would have a third cloth, in order lasakanis abayis, to literally fix the house. Okay, now that obviously requires explanation. If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi writes echelo v'echela lekanech la'acher tashmish. Now, as far as the two primary cloths are concerned, so that's going to be used after they have relations. As far as the additional cloth, l'sakanis abayis, look at Rashi. I'm reading Rashi. Klamar livdok lifte tashmish ulahachin atzma lebala. So this is the aid that's done before tashmish, and this is to prepare herself for her husband, i.e., just simply to ascertain that she is not nida. Now, this is not specific to this particular woman. This is true by all women. In fact, we learned in the first parak this idea that a woman is going to be doing a bedika before she's with her husband. Again, important note for all of us. This is talking about when she's a suka b'taharos. Fine. Now, the language of our Mishnah is a little bit misleading. Because earlier in the first paragraph we talked about how all women engage in this behavior, and now our Mishnah is saying, oh, you know, the very modest women. What do you mean, the very modest women? This is something for everybody. So Rashi reminds us that we already saw the answer to this in the first paragraph. So the tznuos, what they would use is a new cloth every single time. Meaning, stam, a woman who would do a bedika before tashmish with her husband, so she would do... she would reuse the same cloth, assuming, of course, that the cloth she reused is generally clean. But the tznuos, they would use a new cloth every single time. Okay, now, a bedika is done before and after tashmish. Now, after tashmish, bedika was done and blood was discovered. Now what? The Mishnah continues. Nimsal shalot tameim, v'chayav v'karban. Now, if blood is found on his aver, so they are both tamei, and they're both obligated to bring a karban. Okay, let's explain the tumah, let's explain the karban. Tumah, so let's start with the tumah. He was bal nida, meaning the fact that he has blood on his aver now is an indication that the blood was there, obviously, during tashmish, and the blood came from her. So that means then that she was a nida at the time of tashmish. That means that he was having relations with a nida. That means that as far as tumah is concerned, so now he's what's called in halacha a bal nida. A bal nida, a man who has relations with a nida, aside from the isurim. We're not talking about the isur right now. We're just talking about the tumah. So aside from the Yisurim, there's a Tumah of Tumas Boal Nida. Now we know a Nida is Tameh for 7 days. A Boal Nida, a man having relations with a Nida, is also going to be Tameh for 7 days. What if she's in the middle of her Nidus? Let's say she's got 3 or 4 days left in her Nidus. is his tumas nida going to be correlated, run parallel with her tumas nida? So that's the discussion that we're going to be having later in the Masechta. But anyway, the point is that he was bol nida, therefore he's tummy with tumas nida. And she obviously also is a nida, and she had bia at the time. So that means that they are both going to be tummy. Now, of course, her tumah is totally irrespective of the bia, meaning by virtue of the fact that she's a nida, she's tameya because she's a nida. Fine. That is the tumah. What about the karban? So chayav and karban. Meaning, assuming that the did not know she was a nida before tashmish, so this falls under the category of shogeg. Now, I understand that you can make an argument that this falls under the category of ones, meaning he didn't know and she didn't know, but we're going to be discussing that a little bit later on in terms of why specifically this falls under the category of shogeg. The point being is that because the blood is discovered on his aver, so we know that this blood was there during Tashmish, and therefore they engaged in relations during while she was an Ida. And that means now that assuming that it was a shogeg, so both of them are going to have to bring a karban. The language of the Mishnah is a little bit odd because the Mishnah says chayavim karban, right? The language of the Mishnah is good, right? They're chayav a karban, meaning because they're both engaged in the act of bia, right? Rashi's on the Amud base. Anyway, we'll get to Rashi. I'll show you an interesting Rashi. Nimsa al shalom. Okay, back to the Mishnah. Now, let's say she, after having had relations with her husband, she does a bedika. So now, what is going to be the status regarding tumah? What's the status regarding karban? So as far as tumah is concerned, that's pretty straightforward. Well, for her, it's pretty straightforward. For him, it's not going to be so straightforward. But let's start with Nimsa Shalah Osiyom. Here's what the Mishnah is going to do. The Mishnah is going to talk about a bedika that's done by her in three separate time periods, three separate intervals, post-relations with her husband. The first period of time is what the Mishnah is going to refer to as Osiyom. Osiyom is an interesting word. It's an unusual word. Rashi, elsewhere, says that the word is a Greek word. It means immediately. So that means to say that precisely the moment where the relations has come to an end, she does a bedika right there and then. The Gemara later on is going to be even more specific and a little more graphic regarding this kind of interval. So Nimsa Shalah Osiyom Tameim V'Chayav Mekarban. So she is going to be Tameh. They're both going to be Tameh. And they're going to be Chayav A Karban. The Chayav A Karban because we now know that they engaged in relations while she was an Ida. I should do the examination afterwards, but it was Osiyom. It was immediately afterwards. Now, Nimsa Ashala Lachrizman. Now we're going to go to the second interval. Now, the second interval is going to be a little bit time afterwards. The Gemara later on, we'll probably get to the Gemara tomorrow, is going to talk about what this little interval of time is. But if it's not immediately, Nimsa Ashala Lachrizman, so Tameim Misafik. So now, did he have relations with her while she was an Ida? Perhaps. And this is what's called a suffix. Upiturim min a karban. Now the Mishnah says that there's going to be an exemption from a karban, meaning that she did not definitively violate the Isser of Baal Nida. He did not definitively violate the Isser of Baal Nida. And so therefore, they're not going to bring a karban. What about Hashem Talui? So hold that thought. We're going to get to that thought a little bit later on when we get to the Gemara. And the upiturim min a karban. Ezu achrazman. And now when the Mishnah over here describes Acher Zman, now it's not perfectly clear in the Mishnah right now whether we're talking about that second gap of time or the third gap of time. That point will be clarified a little bit later on. But Kadesh Terim Minamita V'Tadich Paneha. The amount of time that it takes her to descend from the bed and wash herself. And the Gemara is speaking euphemistically. V'achar kach metame me'eis la'eis v'eina metame es bo'olam. Now, after this period of time, she is going to be metame meisleis, meaning that remember, like we discussed in the first parak, for the woman now who discovers that she's a nida, she's not only going to be a nida from this point going forward, but retroactive to the 24 hours. Ve'ina metame is bo'ala. However, the retroactive tumah that is going to be for her and anything she comes into contact with is going to be for kelim that she comes into contact with. However, the husband who had relations with her in the last 24 hours, in fact, it was recently, within the last 24 hours. So he's not going to be viewed as a bo'al nida. Meaning, and we made this point in the first perek, the tumah me'eis la'eis is only going to be metame kelim, but it's not going to treat the husband as if he was actually Baal Nida. Rabbi Kiva disagrees on this point. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Af Metame es Baala. And Rabbi Kiva says, no, the Tumah Me'eis Leis is going to move her back, her Tumah back retroactively 24 hours, including the idea that the husband was Baal Nida. Modim Chacham le Rabbi Kiva Bero Kesem Shematam es Baala. Now, here's where the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Kiva, where if she was seeing only a kesem, remember, we discussed this back in the first parak, a kesem is a stain that's discovered on her clothing. That most probably came from her. However, she did not have a hargasha. Without a hargasha, that is not a nida de araisa, but nevertheless, the most likely the blood came from her. And as a result of that, the Chachamim gave her the status of a nida. Because the stain is found on her clothing and because she did not have a hargasha, we do not know when that came out. We therefore go back retroactively, and here the Chachamim are going to agree to Rabbi Kiva because we're going to go back retroactively, not as a simple gzera derabanan 24 hours, but because we literally don't know when this blood came out of her. So therefore, we're going to agree that under those circumstances, the husband's going to be viewed as a bol nida if the husband had relations with her at any time prior to her discovery of the kesem. Going back how far? So we already discussed it back in the first parak. Until the last time she knows for sure that this garment was clean. Until the last time she laundered the garment. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Mishnah. And the Gemara starts off with the following discussion. We're now talking about the man having had done a bedika immediately after the relations. He discovered blood on his zaver. And as a result of that, so we are saying that he is tamei. She, of course, is Tamei as well because the blood came from her. And the Mishnah says that they're both Chayva Karban because we know that they had relations while she was in Nida. Okay. The Gemara wants to know, you know, this stain of blood that's found on him, there could be another source of it. Could be. Meaning, yes, the likely culprit, the likely candidate is it came from her and it's her uterine blood. That's probably true. On the other hand, there's at least a possibility that it came from another source. Now, the Gemara, we're going to see a lot of this when we talk about Ksamim, and that is the Ma'acholos. The Ma'acholos is a louse. So the louse, when it's crushed, so it creates obviously a small little stain of blood. And what the Gemara now is suggesting is that at least that's a possibility, right? Now, if it's a possibility, what is that going to mean? Certainly it's not going to mean that we're going to say everything's okay. Meaning, it is right now only a remote possibility. If you take a look at the first Rashi in the Gemara, so Rashi says, Kina, v'amai tamein vada lisra of truma. Meaning, all we're saying is that because there's a possibility, so let's say the truma that's handled by either him or her afterwards. We don't know for sure he's tamei. We don't know for sure she's tamea. Ulishai b'karban vada lahavi safik litlos truma lahavi ashim talui v'lo chatas d'dilma dama cholosu. Because at least there's a possibility that this blood is coming from a louse and not from her, so I'm not going to burn the truma, and we're not going to have the two of them bring an actual carbon chatas, because at least it remains within the possibility that the blood is coming from another source, and notably a louse. That's what the Gemara is asking.
The louse is not seen, right?
We'll get to that. Right now we're going to say no. Amar Rebbe Zera osa makam baduku etza macholos v'ikadami dachu etza macholos. So Rebbe Zera gives an answer, and there are two ways to express the answer, and there's a subtle difference between the two ways he's going to express it, and in just a moment we're going to articulate the distinction between the two ways. But one way to say it is that when it comes to that area, the area of the woman, it's baduku etza macholos. We know for sure that there are no louse in that area. Or dachu etza macholos. It's really, really unlikely that there's a louse in that area. Now, the two ways to say it, what's the difference between these two ways of saying it? Well, the Gemara says, well, based on these two ways of saying it, let's have the following scenario, where the after having done an examination, blood was discovered. I mean, the man did an examination, he discovered blood, and also, on top of the blood, there was also a actual piece of crushed louse that was on the cloth as well. Now, lahachlishan da'amar baduku ha-me'alma asai. Now, if we're saying it the first way, that the area of the woman is baduku, meaning there simply is no ma'acholos in that area, so then even though that there was a louse found on the cloth, but that didn't come from her. In other words, that must come from something else, but the actual blood itself is coming from her. Now, lahachlish adamer dachuku eima shamash ritzva. And if we're saying that it's strongly unlikely, however, it is unlikely, but if we're discovering an actual crushed louse on the cloth, so then at least there remains a possibility that the louse was there, and during the act of tashmish, so he crushed the louse, and that explains why there's a louse and there's a stain of blood as well. So, small difference between them, but the basic answer of the Gemara is that either impossible or really, really unlikely that there's going to be a louse there, and either way, if there is just blood found on his cloth after he did a bedika, so we're going to say either 100% or 99%, but that's enough to warrant the bringing of a karbon, or not or, and to say that both of them are tameim. Okay, itmar. Gemara continues now discussion. But kabeida habadukla v'tachto biyercha. Gemara deals with the following scenario: a bedika was done with a cloth that was already pre-checked, pre-examined. So we know that the cloth was clean prior to a bedika, and then after they had tashmish, so instead it was nighttime, and she didn't check the cloth immediately afterwards. But what she did is she wiped it on her thigh. Ulamacher matzal adam. And then the next morning, she finds on her thigh blood. So, forensics, but the chances are, the strong likelihood is that blood that's on her thigh that came from the cloth came from her. And as a result of that, she is now going to be Tamea. So, I'm Rav Tamea Nida. And Rav says it as definitively as you could say it. And that is, she's not just Tamea, but Tamea Nida, meaning we know definitively. So, I'm Rav Shimei Barachia V'ha Choshesheth Amartlan. Now, Rav Shimei Bar Achiya says, now, we went over this in Shir, and you didn't say Tamei Anida. You said that there should be a concern that she's Tamei Anida. And the difference between Vade versus Choshesheth would be that instead of a carbon chatas, maybe an Hashem Talui, maybe no carbon whatsoever. We'll discuss more of that in just a bit. But in other words, but not to go as far as to say that Vade Tamei. Now, here in this exchange, that's it. Meaning, Rav didn't respond, didn't reply. And so, unclear what Rav's position was, although he says, Tamei Anida. It marnami amar Shmuel Tamei Anida. Now, Shmuel says it also definitively, that in the circumstance where she did a bedika, she didn't check the bedika immediately after she had relations, but the bedika cloth was pre-checked, and we know it was clean beforehand. She wiped it on her thigh. The next morning, she finds the blood on her thigh. Tamei Anida. Shmuel says the same thing, Tamei Anida. And in the base medrash, that's the ruling. Gemara continues. Gemara now deals with the following scenario. The cloth that was used for examination was not pre-checked. And she wiped herself. And she puts it in a box. Then next morning, the box is examined. And now what do we say? Important detail. And blood was found on the cloth. So Amar Rav Yosef kol yamo she Rabbi Chiya timei uleizik nasuti here. So Rav Yosef says, here's what I know. Rabbi Chiya, for his earlier years in his learning, he said that for sure this woman is Tamea. Even though there is a chance that the blood came prior. And remember, the in this particular scenario, the cloth was not checked beforehand.
Yeah, but it's in the box. It didn't get nothing.
Just give me a second. So Rabbi Chiya says Tamei. Ula Eidzik Naso, and then Rabbi Chiya got older and he changed his tune, and he said, "No, I don't think she's Tamea. I think she is Tahora." Now, this idea of Rabbi Chiya, where he switched his psak, so sometime as he got older in his learning, that in of itself is interesting, but. It happens, right? In other words, if you consider and reconsider and reconsider, so there is a chance that you're right, that you're gonna wise up. But the wise up, whatever, change your mind. That's fine. The curiosity of the Gemara basically goes like this: he went from Tumah to Tahara, meaning there didn't seem to be any middle ground of Suffolk. Suffolk would seem to be the most the most apropos ruling that one should say over here. Consider the circumstances. The cloth was not checked beforehand. She used it to check herself. Obviously, she shouldn't have, but she did. She then put it away. Then she looked at it later. There was blood on it later. Okay, there's a real possibility that the blood came from her. So if anything,
what's the other possibility? If it was in the box.
True, but because it wasn't pre-checked, it could be that it was from a
come into the box.
Okay.
From somewhere.
So at least the idea would be that we would somewhere be in a suffix. But that's not what Rabbi Chiya said, at least not as reported by Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said that he went from saying Tameh to going to say Tahor. And now the Gemara's question over here is very straightforward. Which one of them did he mean absolutely, and which one did he mean in Suffolk? Ibai Luhu. Hechi kamar kol yom avtimeh mishum nida, leizik nasa tira mishum nida, avtimeh mishum kesem. So the first possibility is that he started off by saying Vadai Tameh, and then later in his years, he said, not Vadai Tameya, but what he meant was Suffolk. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that no. In his earlier years, he was saying Suffolk. And then, in his later years, he said Tahora Legamre. Now, that's a little bit difficult to understand in terms of Tahora Legamre, meaning there is blood found on a cloth that she used to check herself. Admittedly, the cloth was not pre-checked. And admittedly, she put it away for some time before doing an examination on it. But to say she's Tahor Legamre, it's hard. It's a difficult position.
Why can't you say that the Chazaka was that she was Tahor before this, and she didn't have any sensation either?
Mm.
So those two Chazaka could, you know.
Yeah, you could say something along those lines. So in just a moment, I'm going to suggest a pshat. I'm going to read Rashi. Who's going to suggest a pshat? Just, you know, I'm just thinking this out loud. Meaning it's hard. It's hard to understand how you could say Tahor Legamre. But, okay. Tashma. So, here's what we know and here's what we're unsure about. We know that Rabbi Chiya went from a position of being more machmir to less machmir on this circumstance. We just simply don't know where to go from to where to go to. He went from Tuma to Safek, that's one possibility. Or he went from Safek to Tahor Legamre. The Gemara says, Tashma, well, let's see. We can put together a couple of clues to come to a conclusion. We're going to be learning a brisa. We're four lines from the bottom of the Amud and Yidal Amud Aleph. Batka beichein abadukla, v'inichtal bekufsa, ulamachar matzah lavdam. So, exactly our circumstance. She did a bedika with a cloth that was not examined already. It wasn't pre-checked. She put it in a box. Next morning, she discovers blood on it. Rabbi Omer Tamei Mishum Nida. So Rabbi's position over here is that she is Tameya. Nida, meaning definitively. And Rabbi Chiya Amar Tamei Mishum Kesem. And Rabbi Chiya says that it is a Suffolk. We're not sure. Suffolk. Now, Amar lo Rabbi Chiya, so far so good. But we don't know, meaning obviously what we need to ascertain is Rabbi Chiya is saying this in the beginning of his years or the end of his years. So here comes the clues as we now turn to the Amud Beis. Amar lo Rabbi Chiya Tamod Shetzricha Kegris Va'od. So, Rabbi Chiya says to Rabbi, you know, let me make the following argument. Now, I'm just going to give one small introduction in order to present the following argument. A woman to become a Nida, how much blood has to come out of her uterus into her canal in order for it to become a Nida? The answer is any amount. Any amount that comes out of her is going to make her a Nida. What about a kesem? What about a stain that's found on her clothing? How much needs to be discovered in order for it to be a Nida? The answer is the size greater than a gris. A gris is the area of a bean. They try to give a measurement in terms of area that it actually covers. Basically, the size of somewhere between a dime and a penny in terms of a circumference. But basically, only when you see that much blood is she going to be a Nida. Less than that, she's not. Why? Well, the answer is very simple. If we know definitively the blood came out of her, so then there's no shear. Any amount, even a kol shu, would make her a nida. But being that the blood now is only discovered on her clothing and did not see and was not seen coming out of her, so as a result of that, we don't know that the blood came from her. It could be a blood of a louse. Now I know earlier this morning we said there's no louse in that area, but when we mean in that area, we mean specifically in that area. However, on the clothing, could be that there's a louse on the clothing, and so therefore, if the blood is only discovered on the clothing, it has to be more than a gris. In order to say it's not a louse. Okay. Now, with that small introduction, Rabbi Chiya says to Rabbi, look, we're talking about a case where she did a bedika. And it was not a pre-checked cloth. And she put it away. And she discovered it later with blood on it. So Rebbe says Nida, Vadas. And Rebbe Chia says, no, Kesem. And Rebbe Chia says to Rebbe, and I know you agree with me that she's only going to be Nida if only the amount of blood on the cloth is greater than a gris.
Right.
Oh, so that's Kesem. Mm. That's not Nida. So Amr Lo, so V'od Amr Lo, sorry, Shetzricha Kegris V'od, Amr Lo Ava. So Rebbe says back to Rebbe Chia, yeah, you're right, but, Amr Lo Im Kain, Avata Asisa Kesem. So Rebbe Chia said, okay, there's no buts. Meaning, if I'm right, and you agree with me that the amount of blood needed on the cloth is going to be more than a gris, so then it's a kesem. It's a suffix, not a vadai. Okay. Now, over here, those are clues. What kind of clues? How does that help us? Meaning, in what way now do we see? Our question, Rabbi Chia, is did he go from vadai to suffix, or did he move in his life from suffix to vadai tahor? So, what clues did were just given to us? So, the Gemara, well, the Gemara is going to spell it out. But let's just first, we're going to continue in the Gemara. So, first the Gemara defends Rebbe. And the Gemara says, look, when it's greater than the size of a gris, so now we know it's not a macholos. Once we know it's not a macholos, and she did a bedikah with this cloth, so it came from her. That would be the defense of Rebbe. But in the meantime, however, my love is Iknu Sokai. So Rebbe Chia at this point in time was in his later years. How does the Gemara know that? Meaning you really have to be like, you have to be a real detective to see that when Rebbe Chia and Rebbe were engaging in this kind of dialogue slash debate, so Rebbe Chia was in his older years. How do I know that? So Rashi says, look at the tone in which they talk to one another. Rashi says, Midapalagala de Rebbe Rabbe. Because you see over here that Rebbe Chia is actually confronting Rebbe. Rebbe Chia would not have done this in his younger years. He would have only done it in his older years. It's an interesting point made by Rashi. You could see Tosos over here not totally on board with this idea, but okay. So my love the Zignu Sokai, Habi Aldoso Timim Shem Nida Shmamina. So Gemara says, yeah, you're right. That's good. So that means to say that, being that this Bryce is describing Rebbe Chia in his older years, where he was arguing Safek, so that means that in his younger years, he was arguing Tuma Vadas. Okay, good. So now we have it all worked out in terms of where Rebbe Chia started, where he landed. Rebbe, by the way, disagreed, meaning Rebbe was of the opinion that under this circumstance, she's Tamei Nida. Vadai. Okay. There was a Rashi that goes through the possibility of her being Tahor Lagamrei because the Gemara did at least entertain the possibility she's Tahor Lagamrei. It's difficult to entertain that. I didn't go through the Rashi inside. You could see on the bottom of the previous Amud, the Rashi Divra Maschal Ulamachir Matal Avdam. Rashi over there offers a suggestion. Please forgive me. I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now. Let's continue in the Gemara. We are on Yudal Amud Beis, about eight lines from the top of the Amud. First words of the line: Mishtabech le Rebbe, le Rebbe Shmuel, be Rebbe Yosi, Rebbe Chama Barbisa, da Adam Gadohu. We see this kind of structure of Gemara often, where you have Tanaim speaking or Amoraim speaking, and they said, you know, this Amor, this Tana, special person. So over here, Rebbe was talking to Rebbe Shmuel, Rebbe Yosi, and about Rebbe Chama Barbisa, and Rebbe was saying, Adam Gadol, a special person, great person. Amar lo lechishevo lecha haviyuhu liyadi. So Rebbe Shmuel, Rebbe Yosi says, love to meet him. Next time he's around, make sure I meet him. Ki asa amar lei bai minei milsa. So, good. Rabbi Chama Barbisa comes to town, and Rebbe brings him to Rebbe Shmuel Barabbi Yossi. And the following question was asked of him. Our question. The cloth was not pre-checked. She used it after Tashmish. She then put it away. Next morning she finds blood on it. What's the halacha? Amar lo kedivrei Abba Emalach o kedivrei Rebbe Emalach. So Rabbi Chama Barbisa says, look, I know more than one opinion on this matter. I know Rebbe's opinion, and I know your father's opinion. Remember, he's talking right now to Rebbe Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, and I know your father's opinion. Amar le kedivrei Rebbe Emali. So he says, well, I'd like to hear what Rebbe says. Amar Rebbe Shmuel, zeu shomer malav dadam gadahu. And Rabbi Shmuel was not impressed. The person's an adam gadol. Hech menichin divrei rav v'shamin divrei atamid. Meaning he had an opportunity to stay over Rabbi Yossi, who's considered the rav, and instead of that, he's going to divrei Rabbi. Rabbi Chama Rabbi Sasava Rabbi Reish Mestiftahu Shchicha Rabban Kamei Umichade Shmaitetai. Now, as far as Rabbi Chama Brabisi, he thought that Rebbe would be a better reflection of the halacha because, as far as Rebbe's concerned, Rabbi Yossi was a bigger gadol. However, Rebbe was the head of the yeshiva, and as the head of the yeshiva, he kept saying over shiurim again and again, challenged. And so that means that each position now is challenged, tested, refined. And so therefore he thought that chadade shmaitata, his position is really sharpened. And that's why he said over Rebbe's Rebbe. My Rebbe Yossi, Amar Rav Ada Bar Masa Tana, Rebbe Metame, Rav Yossi Metaher. So the Gemara over here says that Rebbe's Metame and Rebbe Yossi is Metaher. V'am Rebbe Zera Kishitime Rebbe Kereb Meir Kishitir Rebbe Yossi Latzmo Tihir. Now as far as the positions of Tumah Tahara are concerned, so it correlates with the following brisa. Ditanya, we learned Aisha Shaisa, Oset Sarchel Veras Adam. A woman while urinating, she discovers blood while urinating. Rabbi Meir Omer Imamet is Tameim Yoshevis Tahora. Rabbi Yossi Omer Ben Kachu Ben Kach Tahora. And so a question of whether she's Tameim or Tahora. So let's do as follows. I know we're in the middle of a sugya, but I have to stop now. So let's do as follows. Let's stop over here. Tomorrow we'll go over the two positions of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi in terms of whether or not this woman is Tameh or Tahora, depending on whether she's standing or sitting. Explain both positions. Bring it back to the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. Sorry. Bring it back to the machlokas between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi, and we'll pick it up from there.